your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the next two segments, we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. And Jeff, it was about 3 to 4 weeks that we last chatted, and boy, oh boy, it's a different world currently with the war that's going on between Russia and Ukraine, and quite frankly, what's happened with commodities. We've seen some individual commodities and resources literally go vertical. A little bit of a pullback we've seen this week due to some lessening of tensions between the countries, but this war is still ongoing as we are recording this about halfway through the day on Thursday. It's a different environment for commodities, and I think a lot of investors are trying to make sense of what jumps in prices are here to stay, what impacts to general commodity, maybe supply and demand fundamentals we might see stick around after this war is finished or behind us. Jeff, what's your takeaway from this different world that we have right now for commodities?
Yeah, you know, we've been saying in various reports and interviews over the last week that it's very important for our investors to be able to differentiate between short-term event-driven spikes up and down in prices and longer-term changes in prices that reflect either cyclical or secular changes in an individual market or the overall economy. And you can look at oil, and you can look at wheat, you can look at platinum, palladium, gold, and silver. And in each of those markets, what you saw was that the prices were rising in the fourth quarter and in January and in most of February. And they were rising partly a little bit because of Russia's saber rattling against the Ukraine and the buildup of forces. But they were also rising because of inflationary pressures, strong economic conditions, strong fundamental demand for all of those commodities, and supply constraints. You know, now, then February 24th came, Russia invades Ukraine, and they all go parabolic. And it's important to understand that, you know, that parabolic move reflects this short-term event-driven thing. And I don't know how long the war is going to last. I know if the U.S. and NATO wanted to, we could probably end it in 48 hours, but it's probably going to stretch on longer than that because we seem to have hired incompetent people again as political leaders. But, you know, at some point the war either ends or there's a clear vision of how it's going to be resolved. And at that point, that event-driven spike dissipates. And we saw a little bit of that this week. But there's more to come later when it's, you know, I don't know that hostilities have actually weakened over the last few days. I think the prices sort of fell because of profit taking by people who thought that the prices had just risen so high. But when they fall back, they're going to fall back to where they were in mid to late February, because you have these other cyclical and secular pressures that have been pushing prices up or pulling prices higher before the war started. And so, you know, I think that that's the way that we're looking at it, and that's the way we're encouraging our investor clients to look at it too.
Well, Jeff, you raise an interesting point there in that a lot of these commodities were already moving, like you mentioned, in Q4 of last year. They were already moving at the beginning of this year, and then things just really got accelerated when the geopolitical tensions broke out. So a lot of people are assuming that things will just go back, kind of as you just alluded to the pre-Ukraine pricing. But I wonder, when we just saw a CPI reading come out this morning of 7.9%, where there's still been a steady creep higher in inflation, is some of the move still the fiscal and monetary pressures? Or as you mentioned, there's still tightness in supply in many of these markets. Has that all been alleviated? I mean, couldn't some of the price rise be a concert of different factors all acting together?
Well, I guess that's what I was trying to say. But yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying, is there have been a lot of things that have been going on. So for example, if you look at U.S. consumer demand for goods and services, you know, our imports of product last year, the United States imports, trade imports, were up 19% from 2019 levels. So it wasn't just that demand rose as we came out of the lockdown of 2020 in 2021, but demand rose that, you know, back to pre-pandemic levels, and then another 20%, another one-fifth increase in the volume of goods and services. So there are real economic pressures on inflation. Monetary pressures, pulling prices higher, actually are not nearly as important as a lot of would-be self-appointed pundits on the internet say. You know, the monetary largesse definitely is in there, but the fiscal largesse, which is the Congress and the administration, and not just this Congress and administration, but Congresses and administrations for the last 40 years in worse, ever worsening conditions. The fiscal largesse has been much more inflationary because that actually stimulates real economic demand. So we've seen that going on. You have real demand rising sharply for a lot number of goods and services. You have supply constraints on a number of goods and services. Again, you know, if you look at the February data, food prices were up 7.9% from a year ago. They were up 1% from January. Petroleum-based energy prices were up 25% from a year ago, and they were up 3.5%. You know, gasoline was up 6.7% from January. If you look at non-petroleum-based energy, it actually was down 0.4% from January, and it was about 12% higher than it had been in February of 2021. In February 2021, it's important to remember, that was the first month when you saw, you know, if you go back to February 2021, the headline inflation in the United States was something on the order of 1.7%, as opposed to 7.9%. Yeah, so this inflationary period that we've been in is basically less than 12 months old, or it's about 12 months old now because prices really started rising in March of last year. So we're 12 months into this inflationary period, and people act like this has been going on forever. And you say, you know, and oh yeah, prices rose the highest since 1982. But if you look at 1982, prices had come down. Price growth had come down to 7% in 1982, having spent most of the previous decade between 7 and 14%. So we had a decade of high and hyperinflation back then, and we're coming out of it in 1982. Now we're 12 months into a period of high inflation. And you can disaggregate it and you can say, okay, what about non-food, non-energy, you know, the core stuff. Well, again, automotive vehicles demand, you know, that's up 12% from a year ago, prices for new automobiles, but it's up 0.3% from January. Used cars up 41% from a year ago, but it's down 0.2% from January. So you're seeing some of those inflationary pressures that pushed prices up so high over the last 12 months starting to dissipate. You've got the energy factor there. You've got the food factor there. You've got transportation costs are much higher. You have supply constraints still. So we're not out of the woodwork, but a little bit of perspective would probably help a lot of investors understand better. I mean, I've had people come to me and they're vomiting because the stock market's falling. And then I show them a chart of the stock market over the last 5 years, over the last 10 years, over the last 20 years. And I say, yes, your retirement account has fallen all the way back to where it was last March, the stock component. So a little bit of perspective. You're not, I've had investors say to me, oh my God, how am I going to retire? And the same way you could a year ago, because that's where your stock market, your equity investments are, you know. This is not the Great Depression. And you hear people say, oh, highest inflation since 1982. Yeah, but look at where we were in 1982 and the decade before that. Deepest recession since the Great Depression. Actually not. The depression in 1947 was bigger than this, the one that we had in 2020. And 2020, it was like, what, negative 4%? In the Great Depression, it was something like, you know, negative 11%. I actually have it right here because I'm working on some stuff. Yeah, it was negative 14% in the Great Depression. It was about negative 4% in 2020. So you got to put some perspective on where we are. Yeah, we have problems that are not nearly as bad as the conflict entrepreneurs on the internet would have you believe. And you have to understand where we are in all of that process. Now, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is going to change everything because, you know, Russia has really shot itself in the foot.
Jeff, let's elaborate a little bit on that then. Because, look, the environment has come very quickly here. As much as the markets dropped early on in 2020, it was, what, a four-month plummet and then a climb back higher, a pretty steady climb back higher for almost everything. But now we do have this Russia invasion of Ukraine, and we've seen energy prices spike. We've seen PGM prices spike. We've seen energy prices spike. What is going to stick around at the end of this war?
Well, take a look at palladium. I mean, it started January at $1,800 an ounce, palladium, yeah. And then it got up by February, it was around $2,100 a month. It was trading between 21 and 24. Monday, it shot up to 3,400. Now it's down, it's about 2,900 as we're speaking. My expectation is that it comes back down to somewhere between, you know, 1,900 and $2,200. So we're still going to be higher, I think, when all of this ends. And the other thing about palladium, you notice that we haven't placed any sanctions on platinum and palladium. That's because the auto industry in the world needs those metals. You know, and it's the same as energy exports to Europe. The United States can say, okay, we're not going to take our 700,000 barrels a day of Russian crude because, quite frankly, we could, you know, go to the capped wells in North America, in the United States, and more than replace that in a week. We are not because, again, we have such a great government, but that's beside the point. We can do that. Europe can't do that. So Europe's not going to put sanctions on oil and gas, you know, until they're bombing Poland. You know, it's a very sad reality about the state of politics in Europe and the United States.
Well, Jeff, it's an interesting point because there are certain commodities that are so strategic that they're not willing to go there, like the PGMs. And it just highlights, I know that with the CPM group, you've actually had a couple events on the platinum group metals and just the need for other sources of supply and what your longer term outlook was even out to 2050. But when we see this big run in these metals, like let's say palladium, does that bring in the substitution risks that people may switch to platinum and or same thing with nickel, same thing with copper? I mean, let's not forget copper made an all-time high over $5 finally, which a lot of people thought would happen, but this war just pushed it there. Is there a risk it could get substituted with aluminum? Do you see these high prices as causing manufacturers to look at the raw commodity space differently?
Well, you know, people will substitute where they can. And the substitution of platinum for palladium and auto catalysts and certain other chemical process catalysts has been underway for a couple years already. And this probably accelerates it a little bit. But a lot of stuff like nickel, for example, nickel is used in most stainless steels and you need it. And demand for stainless steels has been very strong on a global basis over the last year or so. So it's a real problem. And the substitutability, it's not necessarily there in that a lot of the things you can say, well, you can use nickel pig iron and substitute away from the nickel ores that we use and get from Russia. But a lot of the things that you could say, well, we can use tungsten or some other metal to substitute away from nickel, they're in short supply. There's probably not enough metal to really substitute away on a wholesale basis from nickel to them. And their prices are probably higher than nickel right now, too. Maybe not right now because nickel shot up this week. But, you know, there aren't a lot of substitutes for that. There are substitutes for oil, but people are very reluctant and it takes a long time to get into it. You know, and you hear the European government say, well, we need to shift away from our reliance on Russian oil and gas over the next 8 years. And that's not going to help you for 8 years, right? it's a real problem in terms of a mismatch in time.
All right. So, Jeff, let's talk about some other drivers then for these markets moving forward. You already covered the inflation and growth numbers, but how about the Fed? Because we are right around the corner from a Fed rate hike, as extreme as some of the predictions got that the Fed would be hiking by 50 basis points. Now expectations have come back down to 25 basis points, and that's where I think the Fed is going to stick, and I believe they're going to try to drive home the fact that they are going to be somewhat consistent in these rate hikes, albeit, man, there's a lot of noise out there in the world right now. How do you think that impacts the markets?
The core economy, I think, pays attention to what the Fed says and what mainstream economists say. And there were, like, there was one FOMC member who said, well, maybe we should raise interest rates 50 basis points in March. And all the others were saying, no, that's not going to happen. And most mainstream economists are saying, no, that's probably not going to happen. And now with the war on, you're definitely not going to see that happen unless something dramatic happens in the next 6 days before their meeting. You know, so you hear a lot of noise. And again, you know, I guess investors have to do things. I ended last year, my last video last year, I said, investors have to know themselves. They have to understand who they are. And they have to take command of the noise and the sound to noise ratio that they're allowing into their lives. And you've got to just sort of say to yourself, okay, I'm going to focus on people who have been right. You know, I'm tempted to start a challenge in the precious metals market. Like, you know, the dignity of people who put forth outrageous things and the foolishness of people to listen to them, it's really causes mental illness for a lot of people. You know, and there should be some challenge or some pledge that, hey, if you're saying that silver's going to $100 or gold's going to $10,000 or the dollar's going to collapse or our interest rates are going to 8% this year, and they don't, you have a ethical obligation to stop saying this stuff in public. You know, I mean, because you've got a lot of people who get really upset and they're really concerned about it. And they probably, you know, should be listening to actual economists and financial analysts and people who understand this stuff and not people who are just trying to sell them precious metals at inflated prices.
I think that's a solid point, Jeff. There should be more accountability. And I would even say that extends to the mainstream economic financial people, though, because there's a lot of them that said inflation would just be transitory for a couple months and that, you know, we wouldn't see it. That there's people that are surprised that the Fed waited this long to start hiking rates. They thought they'd be hiking them a year or two ago. A lot of people called the pandemic crash wrong. They called the Ukraine situation wrong. So there's a lot of bad calls, I guess, across the board. But one thing we've heard a little bit more of, and not to get out onto a limb here, but we have heard calls of the potential of a recession for three factors: the doubling or even tripling of fuel prices, the fact that the yield curve is getting pretty flat. It's only 20 basis points now between the 2 and the 10-year mm-hmm. note. And if those invert, that's usually a signal. And then there's also those calls for slowing growth in GDP. You know, GDP for the first quarter is anticipated to be pretty close to zero. So do you give that any weight, that people and investors maybe should be more defensive than they have been over the last few years, just because there is that risk of this Fed rate hiking cycle tipping things over into a slightly recessionary situation?
Yeah, you know, we have a recession built into our economic projection, at least for the industrialized world. So we don't have it starting until 2024. Yeah, obviously GDP is going to be pretty low in the United States and a couple other countries in the first quarter of this year, but I think it pulls itself out. And yeah, the reality is that it's virtually impossible to project the future, to predict the future. We project. We don't predict, we project. So we look at where we are now, we look at where we've been, we look at recent trends and levels, and we say, okay, what's a reasonable probability for the future? And you run all kinds of scenarios. You know, when Greenspan was at the Fed, I think he had 30 different economic scenarios, and he didn't try to pick the right one. He tried to pick policies that were less destructive across the most reasonable scenarios to expect. You know, and I think that people need to really do that because, you know, yeah, people make, I make projections. Everybody makes projections. You have to have a vision of the future if you're going to be an investor or an investment advisor. But you have to, you know, the investors themselves have to say, okay, who am I listening to? What's their track record? Does this sound reasonable? Or if I stopped and I turned off my computer and I went onto the porch and I watched the sunset and I thought about this, I would say, what that guy is saying just doesn't make sense. And then you, you know, you invest in your convictions, or you say that guy might be making sense, but I need to go back online and find some other people who either might contradict him or might substantiate further what he's saying. You know, people just don't do that. And we see that in the precious metals. I mean, I've had a lot of clients who are billionaires who have made a fortune in other industries. And then they decide to put fund that fortune in gold. And when they do, everything that they knew about how to study an investment and make a decision based on data and detailed analysis and reasonable expectations goes out the window. And they call us up and they say, I was watching this old codger who's 80 years old online, and he's saying that gold's going to $10,000 next year because, you know, because Biden's a communist. So I want you to help me buy gold. I've seen that over and over again. When it comes to gold and silver, people throw every bit of reason out the window, and they act on impulse and beliefs and the last thing that they heard. And you can't do that. Well, you can, but you'll lose money doing it.
All right, Jeff, I want to also talk to you about the majors, the large miners, especially in the precious metals. Those have done pretty well, and we actually have seen a general increase in investment demand for the majors. They've actually moved up in this environment of a higher gold price, and undoubtedly, they have to be making money at these much higher precious metals prices. You also did a video on majors and how they hedge some of their sales. Give us a rundown on the environment you see for the major companies, the major miners right now, especially in the precious metals.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have suffered, but they are doing better in terms of their equity prices right now. And part of that is just because everybody's running into gold and gold assets. And there are any number of investors who do not invest in gold. They invest in gold mining shares. You know, in fact, probably the majority of our investor clients are gold equity investors as opposed to gold investors, but they queue off of the gold price. So the gold majors have done well because the gold price has risen so sharply in the last several 2 weeks and in the last, you know, 2 months too. They still have issues, but, you know, as I said in that video, there are two sets of performance metrics to look at. One is operational metrics, and that's where, you know, said, yeah, they've got to be making money. In fact, they've got to be making a lot of money. If you look at a typical mining company and they have maybe a cash cost of, set, you know, on average of $800 and an all-in sustaining cost of maybe $1,000 or $1,100, and the price is $1,900 or $2,000, they should be making about 100% profit margin. So operationally, they should be doing well. On the other side, which is their equity side, that's where they've suffered. And they've suffered because investors, there were a lot of investors who were turned off by years of underperformance. And they have been addressing those issues. They have started giving out dividends. They have been reinvesting a little bit more wisely than they used to. And I think that that's starting to show. There's a lot more to go in order for the larger gold producers to rebuild the trust that institutional and high net worth individual investors want. But I think that they are moving in that direction.
All right, Jeff, we're going to wrap it up there. Look, there's a lot of cross currents driving the commodity sector broadly, but commodities have skyrocketed. Some absolutely gone vertical, and we're all trying to figure out where a reasonable level is going to be for a lot of these commodities as we move through, hopefully, the end of this war between Russia and Ukraine, as well as this Fed rate hiking cycle that is going to start up in less than a week's time. Jeff, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll chat again in probably about a month's time. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too. Thanks.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.